to move on to the agenda item of wider corporate reporting, and I have not put too much pressure on David by saying that the discussions that we've had yesterday and today, we've all decided that wider corporate reporting is going to solve it all. So, David, with no pressure, I hand over to you. Sorry, I should say David and I have known each other for a very long time, so I'm allowed to tease him.
Thank you, Joanna, and good morning, everyone. Here's one of your pre-lunch light relief sessions. Wider corporate reporting has been a topic of interest to this council for a number of years, and today I thought I'd give you some background to the staff work. When I say staff, I mean me. Looking at the whole landscape in this area and the implications for the board's work, which the board discussed at its meeting last month. So I will give you my take on what happened at that board meeting and where we go from here. Without further ado, if I move to slide 4, in terms of the context, the council will recall that in the trustees' last review of structure and effectiveness, the issue of corporate reporting and what role the board should play in it came up as a topic. And I know that the council were very enthused by this subject. And what happened in terms of the outcome of the trustees' review was that they reaffirmed the foundation's strategy towards wider corporate reporting, that there should continue to be an approach of coordination and cooperation with other bodies, the International Integrated Reporting Council, for example, and other bodies within the Corporate Reporting Dialogue, the CRD, which is now chaired by Ian McIntosh, formerly Vice Chair of the Board, who's sat over here. The trustees said that the board should play an active role but not be at the forefront of leading developments in these areas, but there should be some staff resource devoted to looking across the landscape and thinking about what future role the board should play in this. So in terms of what have I been doing on my holidays, I've started to research the extensive literature into this area. And as anticipated, it's come up with a confusing and complex myriad of frameworks, standards, goals and codes, but equally a growing view of support that companies should be reporting on a broader range of factors than purely the financial ones. I've been looking at developments, in particular those of high profile, and I've mentioned the FSB Task Force on Climate-Related Financial Disclosures. I will get to that in a few slides. Enhancing contacts with various bodies, and doing some work to map the Integrated Reporting Framework, which was published in 2013, with our board's practice statement on management commentary back in 2010. And as I said, I took some initial papers to the board last month. In terms of where we are in the landscape, well, how many frameworks, codes, principles, standards are there out there? Well, pick a number. Is it 400, as the OECD and the Climate Disclosure Standards Board seem to say? Carrots and Sticks, which is a periodic publication issued by KPMG and a number of partners, came up with 383. The Principles for Responsible Investment came up with around 300. And the Climate Disclosure Standards Board and the World Business Council for Sustainability Development have this new reporting exchange website where they claim there's over 1,000 pieces of literature, be they mandatory requirements, voluntary codes, and so on. So peeking across that landscape, I quickly dipped my head below the parapet. The closest we've come to any type of coordination is the CRD that I mentioned that Ian now chairs, but that only covers 8 organisations. So convened by the IRC, it has our board, it has the FASB from the States. On the climate-related side, we've got the Sustainability Accounting Standards Board in the US, the Climate Disclosure Standards Board, carbon development and then going broader, we've got the Global Reporting Initiative and the International Standards Organization. Now, I know, and Ian's in the room, that he wants to give the CRD a higher profile, but it's got a very challenging role ahead. In terms of where we are in support for taking into account a broader range of factors, I looked at the landscape in terms of views from different important stakeholder groups. And what we're seeing from the investor community is strong evidence that this is a growing area, that wider factors should be integrated into investment analysis and decision making. The PRI, for example, encourages institutional investors to incorporate environmental, social, and governance issues. And that organization has seen significant growth over the past decade or so. So it now has, as of yesterday, 1,719 signatories. Now, not all of them will be active or following, or maybe following, the commitments of the PRI to the letter, but it shows the range of interest. The International Corporate Governance Network is a strong supporter of integrated reporting, for example. The CFA Institute is pushing for integrating ESG issues. The board's own Investors in Financial Reporting initiative, we have 18 participants, and 17 of those have policies on their website about the importance of integrating ESG. And I mentioned there BlackRock, which is a notable example, and which has called for standardized ESG disclosures, similar to international accounting standards. A report I saw yesterday from the Global Sustainable Investment Alliance revealed that assets invested in sustainable strategies rose to nearly $23 trillion US dollars at the beginning of 2016. That's an increase of 25% in the previous 2 years. And the Global Sustainable Investment Alliance estimate that now accounts for over a quarter of all professionally managed assets globally. In terms of policy making and regulating, we've had the UN that's been interested in these wider areas for a long time. Now it's come within the theme of the Sustainable Development Goals developed in 2015, with 17 sustainable goals, 169 targets, one of which relates specifically to the importance of corporate reporting, and corporate reporting taking a wider view than just the purely financial. OECD guidelines, both for multinational enterprises and principles for corporate reporting, show a similar theme. The G20 itself, despite lobbying from various parties, has not made specific calls, but it has made references in its various communiques in support of companies having sustainable growth and long-term value creation. The main issue that has been brought in by the G20 was a call for the Financial Stability Board to set up a task force on climate-related financial disclosures. And that task force is working away to finalise its proposals scheduled for June. It issued a recommendations paper for consultation back in December, and it contains specific recommendations for voluntary disclosure by companies in the four areas I mentioned on slide 11, so governance, strategy, risk management, and metrics and targets. Now, the view we've taken from here is that that's very much looking at the front end of things, so management commentary or equivalent territory. And the staff assessment that was discussed with the board was that there are no potential implications at this stage that could lead to the board amending its current work plan, but we'll have to see what the final recommendations say. In terms of other initiatives, if you look at various jurisdictions around the world, this is getting increasing traction. We have the EU Non-Financial Reporting Directive, where we're still awaiting for the Commission to opine on what guidance might underpin the requirements in that directive. The UK's Companies Act, for example, has for all but small companies a requirement to produce a strategic report. There are various requirements in France, and if I go outside of the EU, in India, for example, in February, SEBI, the securities regulator, had a circular mandating a business responsibility report for the top 500 listed entities and suggesting that maybe the IR framework could work for that. If you look at China, the Ministry of Finance Action Plan, under the latest government's five-year plan, there is an emphasis on engaging with the IRC and integrated reporting. In the US, we have last year an SEC disclosure effectiveness review, and the SASB did an analysis of responses to a concept release that showed a strong showing of support for improved disclosure of sustainability-related information in SEC filings. Where that's going to happen under the, where that's going to go under the new federal administration, I'll leave that to you to speculate. But there, as I say, there is a growing support in this area. And if you look at stock exchanges, they are increasingly preparing and producing guidance on ESG issues. I should say at this stage that in my initial review, I've conflated ESG, sustainability reporting, integrated reporting, annual reporting. There's a whole different lexicon and terminology in this area. And it's hard to differentiate whether people are looking for separate sustainability reports, for example, or a broader range of factors, not just sustainability, but dealing with long-term value creation of companies, if you're more towards the investor-focused end of things, that might be integrated into the annual report. So I fully, you know, fess up on that and say, yeah, that's a caveat to beware of. But certainly stock exchanges are getting increasingly active in this area. As well as the examples I mentioned on the slide, we have had in February the London Stock Exchange Group publishing ESG guidelines that covers companies listed on both the UK and Italian markets. And very recently we've seen NASDAQ, the Nordic and Baltic exchanges, publishing guidance last month. And even in the States, the New York Stock Exchange launched a central repository of ESG reporting resources last month. In terms of the profession, we've seen varying degrees of support, but IFAC put out a very strongly worded policy paper in January with its support for integrated reporting. If you look at Accountancy Europe, Fee As Was, they've been had this initiative called Core and More with a discussion paper back in 2015, and they've recently followed that up with a follow-up report that's arguing that its proposals for a core report followed by more reports is consistent with integrated reporting. And all the major accounting networks are involved in this area to a greater or lesser extent. The big six networks, for example, are all represented on the IRC Council. Now, if you're looking at companies, you might think, oh, God, this is just another burden that we've got to get out of the way. But there's evidence that amongst the world's largest companies, is some kind of reporting, whether it's integrated reporting, sustainability reporting, has become the norm. The KPMG survey of corporate responsibility undertaken in 2015 shows that over 90% of the world's largest companies, and by that I mean the top 250 in the Fortune Global 500, published a sustainability or corporate responsibility report. If you're looking at sustainability report, GRI research suggests that around 5,000 sustainability reports were published in 2015. The IRC claims that there are around 1,500 companies preparing integrated reports, although it's not clear whether or not they adopt the IR framework or even refer to it, but they call them integrated reports. And if you're looking at jurisdictions, well, it's big in South Africa, where it's been in place for a number of years following the initial King Corporate Governance Code, which is now in its fourth iteration. Japan's an interesting one where we're seeing now, you know, over 300 companies expected to publish integrated reports this year. So it's a growing initiative. And then if you look at academia, there's emerging evidence that companies with robust sustainability policies and reporting deliver better economic performance. I refer there to basically two meta-studies, one by Oxford University and Arabesque Partners, one by Deutsche Asset Wealth Management and the University of Hamburg, that show that the business case is there for such reporting. And if you look at integrated reporting, the academic literature is less developed, inevitably because it's a newer initiative. But there are a number of reports from South Africa showing positive associations between integrated reporting in relation to stock liquidity, firm value, expected cash flows. There's similar reports there for Singapore, for example. I did mention that a number of academic papers have shown less positive findings, and I mentioned those in the papers I put to the board. In particular, there's a group of academics who think that integrated reporting has been hijacked by the accounting profession and the investor-focused side of things, and it should very much be at the sustainability end of things, whereas the IRC has moved to an investor focused on value creation. So that's the scene as I see it, and it's a very initial survey with caveats. And as I asked the board to say that, do you have any comments on that very, very rapid overview of the scene? Is there anything that's missed? And I hold my hand up and say I haven't got into the assurance area, for example, or looked at the impact of credit rating agencies, or any areas for further research that the council might think would be useful to help inform the board in thinking about what more it might do in this area. So if I pause there for a moment, Joanna, back to you.
Okay, and I'm going to suggest that you unpause, in that I'm going to suggest, because of time and some of the other questions, that you move forward, that people think about their responses to this as we get to the final question, so we deal with them at the end of the session. Is that all right, David? Yeah. So if people do have responses, it's a key question. If we can talk about those and raise your flags at the end of David's talk.
Okay, well, I'll give you my view then, which is on slide 19, that on the basis of what I've done so far, that, this area is, it's not going to go away. I think it's only going to get stronger. Putting certain interests in the USA to one side, maybe. And it's important that the board is across such developments and plays at least some more of an active role in them. But by that, I don't think the board should immediately say, oh, great, we'll start doing standards on the environment or sustainability reporting. But there should be a view, I think, from the board about how it sees its standards fitting within that wider context and with wider reporting issues. There, I've given my bias, which seems to be a theme of the day. So we put, I put a number of options to the board, looking at existing standard-setting activities. There are a number of research pipeline projects that have wider implications. So extractive activities is probably the biggest one, pollutant pricing mechanisms and provisions. And it's whether any of those should be moved to the active research agenda. Now, the issue there is, of course, that the board's just gone through a very fulsome agenda consultation, lots of responses, lots of consideration, and came to a view on its work plan. And I think the view from the staff view was that nothing has changed since that agenda consultation feedback came out last November that would change that view. And in particular, a number of elements around pollutant pricing mechanisms and provisions are kind of dependent on where the board finalises its position on the new conceptual framework, for example. The other idea put to the board was a proposal to revise and update its December 2010 practice statement on management commentary. And I have to declare an interest here in that I was involved in the management commentary work many years ago in its early stage. And I gave the board a map between the practice statement and the integrated reporting framework, which came out in 2013. And it shows a good deal of overlap and read across. But of course, since the practice statement came out, there have been lots of other developments, of which the integrated reporting framework is just one. I mentioned some of the others earlier, the UK strategic report guidelines, for example. And, you know, would it help if revising and updating that statement to reflect such developments, as well as taking into account whatever comes out from the FSB task force, could be seen as a positive to aiding better communication, there's those words again, by companies, even though it would remain non-mandatory. Now, why non-mandatory? Well, if you look at management commentary, and it was something that the team developing that project had, was you're stepping into the area that is traditionally the sort of the remit of securities regulators. So there were discussions early on with IOSCO Committee 1, for example, who said, well, it's all very interesting, but this is our turf. But if you looked outside some of the major jurisdictions, you had the SEC with its MD&A, UK at the time had the Operating and Financial Review, now Strategic Report. Many other jurisdictions don't have such guidance. So the view taken by the board was it would still be helpful, in particular making that link between the financial statements and broader reporting issues, to have something out there. So the board discussed this, and I didn't go with a project proposal deliberately, because if you go with a project proposal, and you know, as Richard's in the room, we'd have to go through a proper due process, for example. But just to see, you know, the take of board members on whether there was merit in doing some further work, that we might come back with one. And on slide 22, yeah, there's lots of further work that would be needed, for example, on scope, whether the board should conduct the project alone or with partners, for example, potential risks and benefits. And one issue that did come out in the board meeting from a number of members was to say, how can we be satisfied that anything the board comes out with would add value rather than add to the confusion, which is a very valid point. I think the take coming out of it was, okay, so proceed with caution, but do some more analysis and exploratory work. So, for example, find out, well, has the practice statement actually been used by companies or had an influence anywhere? I mentioned in the papers to the board that it did have an influence on the Climate Disclosure Standards Board in developing its own framework in 2012. In Malaysia, for example, the Malaysian Accounting Standards Board lifted the practice statement wholesale and made it its statement of principles number 3. So it was in place, again, as a non-mandatory piece of guidance in Malaysia. And there is at least one academic report that looks at the disclosure practices of Malaysian listed companies. It shows compliance with the practice statement to be low to moderate, I think it's fair to say, which probably reflects the voluntary nature of it. In terms of specific companies, thanks to the beavering of our research unit, I found 2 companies that actually assert compliance with the practice statement, one of which, and I hope I'm not going to shock Gavin here, is HSBC. And the other one is SAP. So, small number, but good quality. So that's the kind of thing I'll be continuing to do. And if any council members have their own knowledge or intelligence of the influence of the practice statement or its use, please let us know. Either, well, if you don't get me, then it's going to be April, isn't it, after this meeting. So that's one aspect. The second is looking into, so what's the problem and what's the benefit of having some standardisation? And I think how this fits with other relevant frameworks, so the integrated reporting framework, for example, as well as national frameworks such as that produced by the FRC for the strategic report, to say that would any revised practice statement sit with that? Quite a challenge. but I think something that's doable. And another thing I'm looking at is to say, well, who's calling for this? I mean, I mentioned BlackRock wants standardization, and a number of other investors have called for that. Calls for standardization have been made in various reports. There's one, for example, by ACCA and the Climate Disclosure Standards Board called Lost in the Right Direction, that again talks about the confusing array of framework standards and so on. So again, any intelligence people have on that or any views would be gratefully received. In terms of next steps, as I say, I've been given my homework and gone away to come back on that. Subject to coming back and reassuring the board on that, if the board decides then to take it forward, we then have to start formally thinking about a project proposal, consulting ASAF and national standard setters. There's an ASAF meeting coming up in July where I know at least one of the members of ASAF wants this on the agenda, so we could address the issues with them there. And then we have to go through issues around timing and resources and so on. So I'm at slide 24 with the questions there and thinking about, you know, your views on whether there's merit in pushing forward on this, or at least, you know, doing the further exploratory work and analysis, and is there anything that, you know, we should be taking into account in taking forward that work? And I'll leave it there.
Thank you, David. And I think that it is, as Hans said at the beginning of the meeting, a very important topic for the board. And the ISB update from the last board meeting obviously said that tentatively agreed that the board, if I've got this right, agreed that it should take a more active role. But in terms of the management commentary, specifically said to consult with the advisory council before any decision is made as to whether to get a project plan. I think David has expanded upon, if you like, more granularity around that board resolution there. And I think what David is seeking from us is a mixture of our experience in terms of some of this, so that what research, is there anything out there that he has missed, or do we agree with the summary of the research? And I think that's the first thing in terms of the experience. And then the specific question that is there, the first bullet point, do we agree? Although we have raised it and we've pushed it before, so I am presuming that we do agree. However, I shouldn't put my unconscious or conscious bias on that. In terms of a more active role, I'm suggesting that in the spirit of time and where the board got to, that in fact the second bullet point we don't specifically discuss, but that we do specifically discuss what the board wanted us to, which is our views on the progressing David's recommendation around management commentary, and of course any experience. And Hans wants to make a comment.
So to prevent unnecessary discussion, what is certainly not at the table, on the table, is that we would ourselves start writing, developing sustainability standards. What is also certainly not on the table is that we would develop something that would be mandatory. It will be, if we do something, it would be non-mandatory. So the only thing that is on the table would be that we would provide guidance. If a company wants to write an integrated report, that we would provide guidance how to do that with high-level principles. That's the only thing I think the board would be willing to consider.
Okay, well, with that proviso in terms of what David and I have said, and I haven't necessarily noted the order of who put up what, but Gavin.
So I'm disappointed, Hans, that you're not going to start writing sustainability requirements, but putting that disappointment to one side for a second. I guess, first of all, to comment on some of the earlier points you made, David, particularly around non-financial disclosures. I think certainly HSBC anyway, we've increasingly recognised the importance of these, and indeed this year are putting significant effort into looking at how we move that forward for our own set of disclosures. So, for example, it's part of our CEO and CFO scorecard for this year, is around what we do, particularly ESG and related disclosures. I think, you know, a number of drivers for that, including investor demand. Increasingly, investors use ESG filters. We think around 30% of all investment analysts, for example, use some form of ESG filters. There's a number of quite large funds, particularly state funds out there, that absolutely have an ESG filter before they will invest. And increasingly the sell side as well, as part of their analysis, as part of the reports they put out, increasingly incorporate non-financial, in particular, ESG metrics. So there's that aspect of it. I think from a sort of business perspective as well, certainly from a bank's perspective, it's a area of growing importance. And for example, you know, issuing things like green bonds, they need ratings. They need ratings from ESG rating agencies. And they're important for a variety of reasons, including the ability to distribute, for example, the bonds. In the private bank sector, for example, there's product offerings that we might make to high net worth clients. Once again, they require a lot of this non-sort of financial information. So it's much broader than what you actually might put in a ARA or some other form of public disclosure, I guess, is what I'm saying. You make the note that it's an incredibly fragmented environment. I think that is, and I think that's actually a big problem to really moving this forward. So, you know, we absolutely struggle to understand, get our arms around the variety of best practice, guidance, whatever else might be out there in terms of determining a path forward, and that's really not very helpful. So overall, I would say that non-financial disclosures, particularly ESG-related disclosures, I think are of increasing importance, and preparers are recognising that. And inevitably, as part of the package of disclosures we put out there, whether it not be as part of our annual report or some other form, actually we're paying a lot of attention to them, and I don't think we're alone in that either. In terms of your question around the practice statement on management and commentary, I think that's a really difficult question for us to answer without having some greater specificity around actually how you might approach that and what you might look to incorporate in that. I mean, on one hand, you know, there's the risk that actually all you may do is just add more fragmentation to what's already a pretty fragmented landscape. On the other hand, you know, maybe you could do something useful around that, but once again, it's a practice statement. So I don't think, so from a personal viewpoint, I could necessarily say, is it a good idea or not? I think from the ISB's perspective, also the question will be, actually, what value does the foundation get from putting a resource into doing a piece of work like that that ends up being a practice statement that's non-mandatory in nature, and actually how does that fit into your broader strategy around corporate reporting in general? So I think it's a really good question. I'm not sure, though, we've got quite enough here probably to give you the advice that you're probably looking for at this point, or at least that would be my sort of knee-jerk reaction to it.
Thank you, Gavin. Hidetaki?
Well, thank you, and I would like to say something also about this issue. Well, let me say my basic idea about this wider corporate reporting. Well, actually, wider corporate reporting is considered as a definitely current trend, and I respect, I think that this wider corporate reporting would be valuable for corporate value, definitely. However, as far as ISB is concerned, or mission of ISB is concerned, I'm afraid that ISB should focus on accounting standards and financial reporting, basically. Well, I would say that monitoring developments of integrated reporting and other variety of reporting could be beneficial to improve quality of financial reporting. But in principle, in my view, voluntary disclosure should be discussed and developed through direct communication between investors and corporate management. Therefore, I don't know what an active role exactly means. Anyhow, ISB should not consume limited human and financial resources in this wider corporate reporting area. There are lots of things to do, such as development of accounting standards and research projects. That's my basic idea.
Thank you, Hidetaki Oshek.
Thank you. David mentioned that there are hundreds of different frameworks and initiatives, and I would want to add one more. At the end of last year, the Commission set up a high-level expert group on sustainable finance. The mandate of this group is very broad. It's about mainstreaming sustainability into our policymaking, and it remains to be seen what this group will come up with, because they are quite autonomous. They are subdivided in smaller groups, and they are supposed to report back by the end of this year with an interim report mid-year. Thank you.
So another one to add, David. Giuseppe?
I think that it is quite difficult not to recognize the importance of wider reporting and ESG factors. If you go to the homepage of CFA Institute, you will see a number of documents in this area. CFA Institute is also conducting an ESG practice analysis right now to see what should be put in the CFA body of knowledge for the candidate body of knowledge. However, in my opinion, it is very difficult to distinguish facts from fashion and fiction in this ESG world, which has been described as fragmented, confusing. So I think that while I would support exploratory work and understanding what is going on, if you go out and provide even non-mandatory guidance, you have a risk that non-mandatory guidance would become soon obsolete if the understanding of ESG factors evolve and changes, because I have not reviewed academic research, but I don't think there is a consensus yet. Thanks.
Thank you, Giuseppe. Olav.
Thank you. I think, first of all, I would, from our member companies, there's certainly a desire to do it, some additional reporting, and some of them do it to a different extent, but I think there's definitely something that's there. I think the problem of the sort of mass amounts of different guidance overlapping and possibly even contradicting across different regions is definitely an issue, and so there is a definite interest in some sort of convergence and harmonization. I think that your point about it being absolutely voluntary, I think that's a very important starting point. I think that in terms of the convergence, you mentioned that there's only 8 members of the corporate reporting dialogue, but I wouldn't underestimate the power of even 8. If there are 8 important members and it's the main body that exists, it can have a big effect. So I would say continue with that work and using that as a forum in order to achieve convergence. I think the one point I would raise is that the word integrated reporting can raise some concerns. I think it can imply, but I don't think that's the intention that these should be published at the same time. I think it's very important that companies have the flexibility to stagger these publications, because if it all is done around the financial reporting, that can be too much. And the second thing is also there's an implication that maybe it'll all be in one document and therefore all subject to audit. And I think also that should be sort of dispelled as a not the intention of an application of the term integrated reporting. Thank you.
Thank you, Olav. Jake, I think, was next.
Thank you. A couple of things which I think mirror some of the comments already been made. The key challenge here in my mind is how do you become the one source of guidance rather than the 401st source of guidance, to quote some of the numbers you've already given. And I think in addressing that challenge, one of the things you need to be very clear about is what has led to this proliferation of documents and how what you do will be different to that.
Thanks, Jake. Anne?
Thank you. I mean, first, congratulations for the survey of what's going on. I think you've captured many of the important points. I'd add an additional one, which is the Equator Principles, which were developed by the IFC, and they've had a big impact on project finance. And in fact, some of the banks are revising what they're doing in light of some recent controversies around the Dakota Access Pipeline. So that's a very live source of pressure in the banking industry. To your point about this profusion of experiment, to me, is the single argument for why the IFRS community needs to take the issue up. I think it's quite natural and normal when you've got a new topic that people experiment with different ways of approaching something. But I think this topic is coming to a stage of maturity because of the demand by investors. And the challenge is to bring clarity and consensus and identify relevance to current financial reporting. And I don't, to your point, from an asset owner point of view, as I'm speaking now really as a CalPERS investment person, we actually want to see integration, not in order to have the world's biggest thumping report, but to make sure that issues like climate risk, water risk, labor relations, health and safety become data points that are connected to the financial reports. And, you know, we probably see this more regularly when things go wrong. You know, we lost a lot of money in BP. We've lost a lot of money in coal. We're wondering about what's going to be happening with climate change. So I agree with Gavin. I'm not sure that we can jump from saying all of this stuff is out there and having an impact on the type of reporting that investors are looking for and say the place to go is the practice statement management commentary. I think we're at that stage of working out why we need to be, we would say, we're very clear why we hope the IFRS community will take this topic up. But how is something I think needs more thought. Because, for example, materiality is a fundamental principle, you know, in both sides of the discussion, whether it's financial or non-financial. And I also am troubled a little with the poverty of ambition around it being voluntary, because part of the problem we have at the moment is voluntarism becomes ad hocery, and we can't get consistency in the assessment. So it might be that we need to proceed with caution, and we're not ready to make things mandatory, but I would take the experiment offered to us by the FSB task force. We like their recommendations very much. We think they've built tremendous consensus around governance, strategy, risk management metrics, and say in what areas would the IFRS body of recommendations need to adapt in order to support what the FSB is doing. So we know there's lots of other issues. There's human capital. There's all manner of different things. But we've got the central banks of the world's own task force rightly constrained into a voluntary mode because it's not their day job to issue standards, and I'm quite happy with that. But if we can put that recommendation onto the work programme for the IFRS community, and one would hope also for FASB ultimately, some way down the road, I think we could distill something that's very, very valuable. In terms of the US, we don't know where the SEC will go. The new chairman, Clayman, is being approved as we speak. But I would say that the momentum in the US between investors and companies is very strong. And it may not be driven by regulation and regulatory requirements, but I think initiatives like SASB are giving a framework that's quite compatible with traditional financial approaches on materiality and so forth. So I think we're going to see progress continue. But anyway, thank you very much for this excellent summary. If we can take a current example and work it through, which I suggest is the FSB task force, given its status and connection to the Paris Accord, which is a global agreement, we might actually learn by doing. And most of this has to be worked out in practice, not in theory. And we'd be glad to help. Thank you.
Thank you, Anne. There are still a number of people who wish to, and I'm absolutely certain, have valuable comments. So I am going to continue on this subject because I think it is really important. We have already, and I should have said this at the beginning of the session, put lunch off till 1. I'm not quite sure what that means for the disclosures, principle of disclosures. I'm tempted to say that we should do that after lunch.
Yeah.
Yes, Hans is nodding. So that we should continue on with this subject and break. Is that going to work? When?
Well, then we have to just postpone it.
Okay, let's go through. Because I think we, you know, it is now 12:30. Can we wait till 1:15 for lunch? Yep, or even 1:30. For lunch, so that we finish this subject. Yep. Because I think it is important that we finish this subject, and if we can't do that afterwards, then we'll have that immediately. So we will finish this now and postpone lunch till 1:15, please. Okay. So I've got to Lothar.
Yeah, thank you. Obviously, subject is growing in importance, and it's very correct to think of how to react. To my mind, there's two fundamentally different issues in this subject. The one is the general ESG reporting, kind of boilerplate reporting of all kinds of data, and the other one is ESG type non financial events impacting the valuation and the investability of a company. And I think those have to be kept separately. At my research department at my bank, I introduced a sell-side ESG filter on the reports we sent to investors like 6-7 years ago. Those guys were specialists in ESG type research, which is something totally different from financial analysis. And at the same time, of course, the normal sector analyst had to look into effects which, you know, like came from non-financial factors in assessing his company. So both is correct. I agree, but it's a different issue to deal with, and I agree with the notion that the IFRS organization should not, or it doesn't make much sense to enter the fray of general ESG definition and standard setting. It's not, you don't have the resources, it's not the expertise here, and there are enough organizations who are doing that. And also, I mean, ISB is for like purposes, investors and as users, and I still see very little evidence to show that ESG standards help performance, like of investments. Anyway, but that's just a side issue. So my recommendation would be, if that's possible, to find an operating partner in the sustainability community, even if it's not the biggest one, but somebody who you can work with in actual standard setting, because like what you put up here on page 20, I mean, there's some, like I say, they're obviously ESG type non-financial issues which impact the valuation and should maybe impact the reporting of companies. And you have several things here, extractive activities, pollutant pricing mechanisms, and provisions in general. Maybe if together with a ESG-oriented partner organization, you worked on maybe specifying some rules of how preparers are required to put these things into their financial statements in what form ever, provisions and so on, because on the investor side, basically you'd have to take that into consideration anyway, even if it wasn't in the numbers, to make a wise investment, obviously. That would be my comment.
Thanks, Lothar. Paul George?
Thank you. In essence of time, I won't reiterate all of the positive comments on the work you've done to date, David. Picking up on Gavin and Jake's point about, do we have sufficient information in order to really provide you the advice? I've got three suggestions of how you might provide some more information or gather some more information to help that. The first one, on slides 12 and 13, you list out a number of organisations that are illustrations of the growing support. It would be interesting to know the extent to which that support imposes some form of mandatory obligation on issuers, preparers. Secondly, if it does impose mandatory requirements, the extent to which those organisations that impose those obligations would welcome the opportunity to rethink those in a more consistent way with the international landscape. And the third thing is, are there some common features which perhaps you could bring out which might help those organisations?
Thanks, Paul. Now, Ton, I have a funny feeling he's actually had to disappear. Yes, so he was next on my list. Vanya.
Thank you. And thank you, David. I love it. Your research is very good. I'm a member of IRSC Council myself, and then I'll just like to clarify some things. First of all, integrated reporting is not a framework for a sustainability reporting. It does not deal with the report itself, but rather with the generation of information to be presented in corporate reporting in order to make sure that the non-financial aspect is presented with the same level of quality that the financial aspect is presented. And it is not a question of having another report. It deals with the process of reporting, eliminating the silos and making the corporate reporting the voice of the company and not the voice of one or two members that are in charge of writing something in order to another very important institution that I would add to your list is the corporate reporting body at UNTAD that is called ISAR. ISAR has been giving great importance and value to integrated reporting lately. About the academic research, it's one of the things that IRSC has been stimulated quite a lot because we understand that integrated reporting is good, but we are partial because we are part of the process. So we've been stimulating quite a lot of academic research so they can prove that in an impartial way. So we have to wait some time for that because it is still a very new framework for us to have an idea. And about being mandatory, it is not the aim of integrated reporting to make it mandatory, but I would say it is not mandatory yet because it is generated by a coalition where regulators are present. And so I have lunch with the chair of the Brazilian Securities Commission, and integrated reporting is very strong in Brazil. And the first question that the chair of the Securities Commission asked me was, Vania, is it right time for us to make it mandatory? And I told him, not yet. It is still new. And I think that we have, as accountants, we have great experience in corporate reporting. And I wouldn't say that it is a mission for IASB to be the one leading this process, but we cannot be apart from it, because if it aims at improving quality in corporate reporting, that's one of the missions of IASB as well. So we should be part of that. So just some contributions.
Thank you, Vania. John.
Very briefly, thank you, David, for the extensive survey. You noted that you hadn't yet moved into the assurance area. Just to note that the International Auditing and Assurance Standards Board has been quite active in this area and latterly produced a discussion paper supporting enabling and trust in emerging forms of reporting, and they're looking at the feedback on that. So I can forward that to you. I'd certainly support the staff view on the third of your bullets in the previous slide. It is over 6 years since the practice statement was issued, so I think it is appropriate that given the significant developments in broader corporate reporting, the impact of those developments on the practice statement should be considered. So I think that is appropriate. Thank you.
And last but not least, James.
All right. Thank you, Jonah. I suppose it's a perspective from South Africa, looking at the integrated reports that are created by companies on the Johannesburg Stock Exchange. And the concern I have with integrated reports that are produced in South Africa is the lack of comparability that is happening there between the different reports. You have some reports that are, and rightly so, with the amount of effort that's put into them, absolutely fantastic. They tell a story. They are true to the framework of integrated reporting. You also have the other extreme, personally, that's my personal view, where I think it's more of a PR exercise than anything else. I think, and I accept all the limitations that there are numerous frameworks out there, and it's difficult to try and coalesce into one place, but I think the ISB has considerable experience in trying to create some form of robust reporting. It could add to this new, if you want, this new reporting type that is happening. I think the ISB is actually part of corporate reporting, and I think that is what they can bring to the table. Whether it's by way of the practice statement being updated, which may be a start, or maybe a more active role in the corporate reporting dialogue or other similar bodies, I'm not 100% sure, but what I think the ISB can bring to this reporting is considerable experience, and I would recommend that they do so.
And I was wrong. Sorry, James, you were not last but not least. Goro.
Thank you, Joanna, and sorry for keeping my colleagues to be on this discussion. But I think that as everybody suggests, that the non-financial, not only ESG climate change things, but also that the non-financial information is clearly becoming increasingly important, and the boundary of financial and non-financial is increasingly becoming obscure. Therefore, I think that it could be a part of financial reporting as our conceptual framework suggests. But as Lota suggests, we should clearly distinguish general ESG and non-financial events' impact on financials. Well, what we need in the practice statement should be the latter. And also, I have found management commentary practice statement itself seems to have a little obsolete. I mean that in terms of language, for example, I have found that it doesn't, it says about something value creation, but it doesn't say it as a business model, or also it encourages the kind of key performance measures, etc. But the language is not APM or non-IFRS. So that in this better communication agenda, we are talking about all these APM, etc. So it might be a good timing for us to review the relevance of the MC practice statement within this better communication agenda. But lastly, I think I'm not sure it is a very good thing for us to include these ESG factors in management commentary practice statement or not. But I think at least that we should, make a research on that. This is the last one. And ISB should recognize that the possibility if we really include the ESG factors in the management commentary practice statement, this may have a significant impact on the consolidation of the ESG sustainability standards. So I think that the ISB is a very, influential, although clearly we do not have an expertise on this area, but the inclusion of the official ISB statement could have an impact on the consolidation of this confusing situation. I'm not sure if it is good or not to ISB. Thank you.
Thank you, Goro, and thank you, everybody, for your contributions. I think that if David's head's not spinning, it should be. However, some really invaluable comments there, I think, in terms of going forward. Now, what I'm going to try to do is, I did write here summarise, but I think what I'm going to do, because I'm not sure it's possible to summarise, to me there were some key themes that came out that were, everybody had different views, but some key themes I think that came out of that is that there is support absolutely for the research that's been done. There is obviously more bodies to be added to that, support more research, because I think there is a proviso in all of this that there is more information that is needed. But I think it is clear that generally, from what I got as a theme, is that the ISB should not be writing its own standards. And what I got mostly from a theme, with a few exceptions, is that right now there is little support for revising management commentary, that more work needs to be done before that comes through. I think one of the key things, though, that did come through to me, theme from everybody, is that there is absolutely a role for the ISB in this area. And Anne made the comment about, the ISB should be involved in consensus and relevance. So it's quite what that role is. There were a number of suggestions with partnering with somebody else in terms of standards or through the corporate reporting dialogue and acknowledging there are only eight. So to not necessarily to pick on somebody who's going to be the leader, but to try and influence, because we do have that, as I think James said, that we have the robustness that we can bring to the table, so we can and should be influential, is the theme that I have heard, I think, from most people around the table. And, sorry, I should have said at the beginning, acknowledging that it is definitely becoming more important. It's more than just a one-off trend, given the proliferation, and I think Gavin summed that up for everybody at the beginning. So I think, to me, the common theme was, David, perhaps you should be working for more than a day and a half a week. So, and Hans now wants to just make a quick comment.
Well, it's clear that there is considerable caution in the room. I think that caution is justified. There is also caution in the board. We need more work before we are ready to make a decision, and I think Gavin is right, and we have to give a little bit more clarity. If we do something, what would it be? I also think when you look at this fragmented world of integrated reporting, the fragmentation in itself is going to stay for the foreseeable future. Unlike financial reporting, which was generated by the profession, became consensus and then regulation, this has part of the integrated reporting requirements around the world are already regulation, are sometimes part of a political world, and are not, those are not likely to go away. So it's very likely that the fragmentation is going to remain. And that is why I think that the only way out is something on a voluntary basis. And I also think the only way out is something that is along the ideas of the FE, former FEE, now Accountancy Europe, the CORE and the MORE report. The MORE will be all the requirements that are currently in place, and the CORE could be something like a CORE integrated report for which we might be able to write some general principles. And quite frankly, what has been a source of inspiration to me is the FRC's strategic report, which has many elements it's not fully an integrated report, but it has many elements of it. And it has worked pretty well in the UK, and I think it has also been a source of inspiration of the work that the European Commission has done. So there is already a bit of a core there. And I think it should be possible for us to work on that and create some sort of an international strategic report without calling it that. We wouldn't want to steal your name, but I think the best compliment is copying.
We can charge a commission.
Yeah, okay. And I think that could be helpful for the world. It could be a service around for preparers to give them a little bit more inspiration for how to write an integrated report, and we bring our reputation and expertise to the table, and perhaps that could be the beginning of some sort of spontaneous convergence towards a concise integrated report, also building on the work that the IRC has done. Not sure. I think we need to do more work. We have one strategic interest in this, is that in many integrated reports, there is also, of course, financial information. And currently, the requirements for that core financial information are not set by us, and we have no influence on that. And I think in this way, we could also make sure that if financial information is used in a core report, that we kind of like it, or that we can give some guidance as to how to do that. So I believe that we have a strategic interest here, especially for the longer term. But exactly how to do it it would be a beastly job, probably, and very difficult, a political minefield. So I understand all the trepidation and concern, because we have that ourselves, and I think we need to do more work if it is at all feasible. But so my instinct tells me if we don't get involved, it will happen over and above us, and maybe it's better to play a more active role. And we are one of the few global organizations that has something to offer in this field. So That's where I stand at this moment. But I, you know, the board as a whole, I am not completely convinced yet, and the board as a whole is neither.
Thank you, Hans. And I think actually what you just said right at the end there is broadly the theme from here. We've got to do something. It's not quite sure exactly what. So, David, do you want to make any last comments? No. Okay. So what I will do is say thank you very much to David, as everyone else has done.
Just to say thank you.
And thank you for your input.